Asking from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Keep Asking. Today, this is Lizette Beard, and I'm here with my colleague Scott McConnell and Marty Duren. Marty, welcome.
It is great to be here.
So today we're going to talk about who knows what. The intention as we begin is to talk about how research and data can help pastors and suggestions Marty has for pastors as they approach data, research, that kind of stuff. But again, it could just end up anywhere because
it could spin out of control in a big hurry today.
Right. So before we spin completely out of control, let's give up a sponsorship spot and let Marty promote Pastor Chat.
I would be happy to promote Pastor Chat, but I don't know what that is.
So
don't I promote Pastor Talk?
I know. I did that on purpose to
you're the straight man in this duet here?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Pastor Talk is the new podcast of Lifeway Pastors, and I am the most of the time host, and it's my pleasure to interview a lot of different pastors and authors and professors and miscellaneous people that I can scrounge up because we're looking for tools and encouragement to help pastors and other church leaders shepherd their flocks well. And so we dropped our first episode 2 days ago as of this recording, which was the 14th of March, that we dropped, and it'll be every Tuesday. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or any of those other podcatchers. Pastor Talk.
Pastor Talk with Marty Duren.
Pastors tend to have a gift for that.
They do, but they're good to listen sometimes too. So a podcast is fitting, I think.
So why a pastor podcast? You have a lot of different interests.
One of the reasons that we're doing a podcast is because people are more mobile. So even though we think of people reading on their phone, and you can definitely read like when you're in the elevator, you're on a walk or something like that. Some people do. Being able to listen to stuff is also a convenience factor. So you can listen in your car. You can listen while you're walking at work or in the mall or shopping or cutting grass or whatever you might be doing. And most episodes of podcasts are 30 minutes or less. That's a typical commute for most people. So it's just another way to give content that hopefully will help people be better at what they do.
Now, you have an interest in pastors and a heart for pastors because you have... I really don't know if I can actually say it out loud.
I'm going to make you say it out loud.
You have experience as a pastor.
Yes, I have some experience as a pastor. Right now I'm bivocational. I'm on staff part-time at a church just outside of Nashville, so I guess it's a suburb. Do we actually think of Nashville suburbs? I mean, do we think about it that way?
It kind of goes straight to country pretty fast.
Yeah, it does. It really does. So if you're in a metro area and you have suburban Atlanta, for instance, or suburban Dallas, we don't really think about it like that here. It's kind of odd. There's just different towns outside of Nashville. And so that's where I'm on staff part-time at one of those. But I've been in ministry either full or part-time almost uninterrupted since 1989, I think. There was a two-year gap where I wasn't employed as a minister, but I still preached and taught some as the opportunities came along.
It was just as a little bit of background, Marty and I have known each other for several years now, and the very first time we met in person, we were sitting next to each other at Marty's welcoming party, and I was like, "Oh, that's Marty Duren." We'd interacted via email on a couple of projects. I sat down, and he was talking to somebody else, and I waited patiently, and I just sat there. And then he turns around. I put out my hand, and I said, "Hello, I'm Lizette Beard," and he says, "I know," and then turns back around and continues talking to the other person.
And so that has been the foundation of our relationship, has
yes,
it not?
That's so if a little snark comes out that Marty's interaction with me is not always pastoral.
And everyone who listens should probably know that what Lizette just described is how most of her friends view their need to have a relationship with her. She consistently needs to be held in check.
All right. That's fair. All right. that's fair. I get that. So we're all kind of in this. Marty's one of our colleagues here at Lifeway.
We're just like the banana splits.
I don't even know what that means.
Really?
Yeah.
Scott?
No, not.
Seriously?
No
idea. After after school television in the 70s?
That's my jam, and I have no clue what you're talking about.
Well, it's on YouTube.
The Banana Splits?
The Banana Splits, yes.
All right.
Came on right before Gilligan's Island.
Well, I watched that.
Yeah.
And I was probably trying to catch Brady Bunch on too many different stations.
I'm not even sure you were born yet.
That was good. That was really good.
Christmas present for Marty.
Thank you. Pretty excited about that. All right. So, Marty, I know that because you're in here with research people, you're going to just say pastors need as much data as they can get all the time, day in, day out, and make all their decisions based on data.
So should I just say amen now and we can go to another question?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I honestly can't say how much data pastors need, but I can say that pastors should avail themselves of good research. We're communicating in a day when, you know, hashtag fake news is everything. and so people, I mean, there's a lot of times that people don't know what to think. They don't know what to believe about certain things, or they read a headline. And as we all know, headlines sometimes say exactly the opposite of what the article actually says. So I think when pastors, or if you're an assistant pastor and you lead a ministry in your church, but you're always in front of leaders, other leaders or volunteers, it's good to have solid content that gets your point across or helps them understand the context in which they're ministering. So if there's research on mental health that Lifeway Research has done, for instance, and you need to address that in some way, then you can access that at lifewayresearch.com, I believe, mm-hmm. along with a lot of other studies. I'm using that as an example. And when you stand before your people in a sermon or you stand before a meeting at your church and you say, this information came from Lifeway Research, there's an authority there that might not be there if you stood up and said, well, this came from an MSNBC poll, you know? and so there is a need for some authoritative information that we can share. And, I mean, clearly Lifeway Research is a great place for that. I don't know how to break down data. All I know how to do is read y'all's conclusions after y'all have already broken down the data. But having that kind of information that talks about the percentage of people who experience this or the percentage of pastors who are struggling with this, that's good information to have in order to bring some authority to your sermon or to your position or to the lesson that you're giving or whatever.
Why do you think that some pastors and some church and ministry leaders don't avail themselves of research data and don't bother to look to see what studies have been done?
Off the top of my head, I would say there's two reasons. One is time. There's such an enormous time crunch in ministry, whether you're full-time or part-time or volunteer. If you're pastoring, then there are certain expectations, and there's not always the time to look at every possible component that you can research for a sermon or for a staff meeting or something like that. The other one is lack of knowledge, that people just simply don't know that particular information is out there. So what I would say is if you're looking for good, hard data to use on a regular basis, I mean, even if it's once a month, you want to use a survey of some kind, then make lifewayresearch.com a go-to place because you have a search bar there. You can go in and type in anything, and all the studies that you've done and the surveys that you've done are there for people to see. And a lot of times it's a lot more in-depth on the site, or you can download, I think, like a full slideshow, whereas a story that's in Baptist Press or that gets picked up by the Washington Post is going to have two slides and two sentences, and that's it. And there's just an enormous amount that's involved in these surveys. But I think ultimately it's too busy and just not aware of what kind of information is available.
When you're getting ready to say you want to have some research, any source, I mean, obviously you're going to go to the Bible first, Lifeway Research second. Say
I read those censuses in numbers. That's what gets me yes. primed to go do Lifeway Research.
But say you want to either blog or preach and touch on a topic that we don't have anything on, that which would be the only reason you'd go to any other source.
That's exactly
but,
right.
But, you know, if you just go to Google, you can get who knows what. Mm-hmm. So how do you kind of triage the information that comes bombarding in on a computer screen? You know, how do you sort through all that to get to the good stuff?
Yeah, well, first of all, on a survey side, if it's something that Lifeway Research hasn't done, the next one in the line would be Pew, and I guess the next in the line would be Gallup.
Good suggestions.
Those have been around for so long. They're so consistent. They're so trustworthy. I mean, they correct their mistakes if they make any. You don't have to worry about them putting stuff out there just for fun or to get clicks, you know. So that's when you're looking for that kind of thing. And they've got such a warehouse of information to look through that you can look over years of studies or years of surveys and that kind of thing. As far as other information, for me, it's always going as close to the source as possible. So if I see a story that X is happening in Amarillo, and all of a sudden I see all these other websites that are talking about X happening in Amarillo, then what I usually do is try to go to an Amarillo television station website and find out what's actually going on in Amarillo. Because if there's something big enough in Amarillo for 100 websites to pick up on, if it's real, then some TV station in Amarillo or radio station has already broken that story locally. And if it's on no website from an Amarillo news source, then the chances are it's sketch and I'm not going to deal with it.
It's sketch. Marty is so hip with the kids' lingo
today.
You know,
the kids' lingo, I don't have on any, like, what are those boots, those little boots that are laced up and all that kind of stuff. I'm just a tennis shoe man.
Okay. So oh, I
lost my hipster cred there. I can't wear Vans anymore because my feet hurt.
Oh.
So I'm an old man.
So you're gelling.
Yes, I'm gelling with Magellan. The hipster means something different for old people than it does for young people. So, hip outster is more like it.
In general, broadening out to you when you're your research process, mm-hmm. Not that you're a research entity, but you know, sermon prep, blogging, what kind of sources in general do you go to if you're the starting point? You're not reacting to mm-hmm. news, but you have a topic in mind or something you're wanting to communicate. What does that look like when you get started?
Oh, that's a really good question, actually.
I love the surprise. I wish you could see the surprise on his face.
I mean, this is so unusual. I have to think about it. I wasn't expecting a good question.
The thoughtfulness I was able to generate.
Surprisingly, one place that a lot of people I don't think go where you can find an enormous amount of information actually already pulled out for you is Goodreads.
Yeah,
because people post quotes from books that they've read. They can post the quote by author. And so a lot of times when you search quotes by whatever Albert Einstein or quotes on leadership, one of the top results you're going to get are results that have been posted at Goodreads. And so I did a search last week. I think it was on preaching or something like that. And there were amazing quotes that had already been culled for me. I didn't have to read 1,000 books. Didn't have to go buy a book. They were already pulled together. As far as news stuff goes, I find it good to look for long form rather than the immediate, because so many mistakes can be made in the urgency of trying to get something online for people to see.
What do you mean by long form?
Magazine type articles that that loop back around. So, for instance, I like The Atlantic. I think The Atlantic is a balanced source of information. They don't usually come out with the breaking news. But 2 weeks after the news has broken, there's going to be a long-form article in The Atlantic that's going to be more broad and more in-depth than the breaking story. So sometimes if I'm preparing a sermon, I might mention the breaking story, but if I'm going to deal with an illustration in depth that's a current story, I might look for a broader or a later story to pull from that has more content. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. No, I think that's great.
As we think about how our culture is changing in the U.S. and how pastors are trying to stay in tune with that.
I hadn't really noticed.
When we come out with statistics that show that it's changing mm-hmm. or we show that America's kind of 50-50 divided on an issue, and especially if we're showing that it's changed to the point where a biblical worldview is in the minority— mm-hmm. Does that make it hard for a pastor? I mean, are we kind of backing them into a corner with statistics like that kind of say that the Christian view is not popular?
I would hope not. I tend to believe that having as much good information as we can get makes us better prepared to communicate as well as we can. I don't want to stand, and I don't preach often. I'm not the preaching pastor at our church, but I'll preach several times a year in the church where I'm a member, and then a couple of times a year outside that. And I want to have as much ammo as I can before I release that sermon or that talk or whatever to the people who have gathered up to listen to it or on a podcast or whatever. So there's not enough information or even negative sounding information that's going to mess me up. But what I think the challenge for pastors is to be able to take information that the congregation might view as negative or, you know, harmful or something like that, or less joyful than some other information, and still present it in a way that demonstrates that Christ is King, that the kingdom of God has come, and that these things will not defeat the Church of God. And so, or the Southern Baptist Convention, or the Methodist Church, you know, the Church of the Living God, not the denomination. So I think regardless of, so if it's gay marriage or if it's abortion rights or whatever the survey or the study happens to reveal, and whatever those opinions are on that information, it does not have to be presented to the congregation with, you know, woe is me, I am undone. It can be presented, this is where we are, this is how we can respond, and this is what God can do. So it's never, I mean, the scriptures never point us to hopelessness. It always points us to hope, and that hope is in Christ. And as long as we're following him and submitted to him and leaning on him, then we can have a positive effect regardless of how bad things are in the culture.
And even to acknowledge that some of those non-biblical views are probably present in the room as you're sharing, and to be sensitive to that, mm-hmm. and not just trying for the amen.
Exactly. It is, if it's true in the world, it's true in the building. I mean, that's absolutely true.
That's really good. I'm kind of...
You can tweet that when we're done.
Yeah, absolutely.
But attribute it to me. Don't take credit for it. I know how you are.
I've got time to decide. I'm going to let a few days pass.
Yeah, you can change one word and then get the copyright on it. But that's absolutely true. And what pastors often don't think about is sometimes we want to be so firm in our condemnation of evil that we don't realize that to people who may be guilty of that or struggling with it, even if they're not yet guilty, it just comes across as a condemnation of them, not the thing they're struggling with. Now, is that a fine line? Sometimes that's a very fine line. And, you know, we don't always pull it off well. But I would say we need to go into it with the mind that whether it's gay marriage or abortion rights or bisexuality or whatever the current thing is, that there's a better than good chance that there's either a believer in the room that's struggling with it or an unbeliever in the room that's given over to it. And we got to give them good news, mm-hmm. not just bad news.
One thing that I've noticed with our colleagues in the office or when people pop in, that you can be really tough on people. And I mean this in a good sense when you know, we're talking about a cultural topic, a political topic, whatever, and you'll push for someone to support whatever their claim is. You'll ask for, give me details, where are you getting that? And it's good. And I people who like to argue, and I mean all of this in a very positive mm-hmm. sense, and like to have those discussions, are very drawn to you in a very iron sharpens iron. Okay, that's way too much affirmation for one day. So I'm going to dial back.
Could you please stop that in about 30 minutes?
Yes, I know. But as we've already established, you do not fulfill a pastoral role here at the office. So when
that's right.
You,
I don't have a counseling office
right.
here.
So how do you, that strikes me as kind of how you're wired, how you want to think, and how you expect others to think. But as when you are in talking with someone who is in your church that mm-hmm. you're shepherding and pastoring, how do you balance that engagement for sharper mm-hmm. exchanges of ideas without overly influencing them or overly discouraging mm-hmm. them, you know?
Well, I would say it's if you're thinking about in church life, you might have three, even four conversations about the same thing with three or four different groups, and that conversation is going to be in three or four different ways. So if you're a pastor or on the staff and you have a staff meeting, you might have a conversation that is very much an iron sharpens iron. So you are really going after, and it may not be doctrinal, it may be anything, but just say because of what we're talking about, you're looking on how to articulate your church's stance on something that people are now needing to know, where do you stand? And so you go into staff meeting and you're just, it's bullets flying. I mean, it's everybody giving everything they have, critical, not critical spirit, but criticizing, critiquing, picking apart, putting back together, and trying to get to a consensus way to communicate to the church what the position is. Then you might go to either an elder meeting or a deacon meeting where you're taking it to the next level of leadership, and you're going to have it might be another straightforward conversation, but it may be more bullets flying depending upon your situation, or it may be less and them just processing that information. Then you go to a group of small group leaders or Sunday school teachers or something like that, and you present it. I mean, you're not hiding anything. You're just modifying the way that you present it, because you're not coming at them 100 miles an hour at this point. Now you're coming at people going 10 miles an hour because they're having to consume it in a completely different way. They're not starting at the same place that the staff would have been starting. That, I think, is one of the biggest mistakes that pastors make in leading the church, is they have these conversations in the hall with their staff, in staff meeting with their staff, in their studies with their staff, and by the time they get ready to present it to the church, they forget that the church hasn't been in all those meetings, and they're not prepared for this content. And so for them, it's just like somebody dumped a cement mixer full of concrete into the auditorium, and they're completely ill-prepared for what the pastor thought, hey, we're ready to go. Well, no, the church doesn't even know what's right. going on. And I think it's the same way when you're trying to establish any major part of an initiative or a position. You're going to have different levels of conversation, each of which is a different type of conversation. So when we're here in the office, I know typically, and I think everybody knows of me, what most people can take in a debate, and that's really what we're doing. We argue a lot, but it's really debate. And then what you do and you just do and don't say in that kind of a context. But when I go home and have a conversation about some of this stuff with my wife, I don't go at her like I would go at Bob Smetana, for instance, who's, you know, screaming bloody murder and New England Patriots and everything else. And nobody knows, you know, what's going on except Bob. So if I take that conversation home to Sonia, it's going to be, you know, we're sitting around the table drinking coffee or whatever, and we're just talking about it.
Mm-hmm. A little bit, twisting that just a little, not your words, but how do you, when you are talking to a church member and they are coming to some conclusions on these cultural issues that you kind of react to, and you want to lead them, I would think the personal desires, I'd like to lead them to believe exactly like I believe, but I also want to lead them to Scripture. How do you approach that, just even in a one-on-one conversation where you see yourself, because I think that's becoming more and more common in evangelicals, Protestant church today. Oh, wow, look, we have some pretty big differences. How do you do that when it's within your own church?
A couple of things. First, I think pastors really have to do a bang-up job of what is a first-tier doctrine. What is a foundational doctrine of the faith? We're talking about the resurrection of Christ, the virgin birth, the things that, if you take those things away, it's not even the gospel anymore. Then you have to determine those second and third tier doctrines. What really is? Is your eschatology an absolute first tier doctrine to where the position you hold, you believe, is the only biblical position, and anybody who holds another position isn't even biblical? The version of the Bible that you use, CSB, the version of the Bible that you use. Do you have folks in your church who, for them, that's a first tier issue, but for you, it's a third tier issue. So I think, first of all, the pastor has to determine what are the top tier issues where I can't not only break, I can't even bend on these. These are what make Christianity, Christianity. And on those, you have to be prepared, as the proverbial thing is, you have to be prepared to die on that hill. You can't give those away. You can't give away the store there. But on those second and third tier ones, I think you have to be willing to acknowledge to whoever you're conversing with in your church, you know, not only do opinions differ on this, but theologians don't agree on X.
Right.
And you have to allow them not only that you're not claiming to hold any high ground on the area, but that nobody really should be claiming to hold the high ground on that particular point, that you've got to be willing to agree with the person in your small group and disagree with the person in your small group on this particular area. This is not, you know, my hobby horse, and you can't let it be your hobby horse, and help them to form that, level of or that triage in their own mind of, okay, well, this is the top tier, this is second tier, this is third tier. And then from there, you can help them determine what's the most important and least important as you're helping them think through the specific issue that they may come to. And I mean, ultimately, there are going to be issues in which people leave local churches. I think of, you know, the gay marriage issue. If you're in a church that stands for traditional biblical marriage, then you're going to have some people in time are going to leave your church if you do not bend on that issue. If you do not ultimately say at some point, yes, it's okay for two people of the same sex to be in a relationship and to be married or whatever the terminology is at that given time, today it's marriage. If you do not bend on that, then at some point you will have people leave the church and you have to know that. But you have to question on other issues that aren't as biblically cut and dried. You know, how many people am I willing to have leave the church because I'm a mid-tribulation rapture guy instead of a pre-mill or an all-mill or some other mill, you know, cornmeal. I mean, you know, whatever your position might be, you have to define, you have to delineate in your own mind first, where are those lines before you can help people? And honestly, I think you have to do that before you can be honest with people and accept their view as one that's worth either encouraging them in or warning them from.
Well, Marty, I want to say thank you for a surprisingly insightful interview today.
Well, and I'm glad to be here, and I don't really understand why you see it so insightful as that. That hurts.
So that's our very special episode of Keep Asking today. Oh. And check out Marty's podcast, Pastor Talk.
Yes.
And you can also please feel free to tweet to him any affirmations, warm, fuzzy, special quotes that mean a lot to you.
And it's at Marty Duren, M-A-R-T-Y-D-U-R-E-N.
All right. We're going to just let you have that space and go out and rate and review his podcast. I know I can't wait to do so. I'm going to barrel out of here.
You've been blocked.
I'm going to barrel out of here and make sure I get that taken care of. So thanks for listening.
My pleasure to be here.
All right. See y'all next time, or talk to you next time. Bye.